For millennia of human history, the future belonged to the strong, to the parent who could kill the most animals with sticks, and to the child who could survive the winter or the epidemic. When the Industrial Revolution came, masters of business efficiency prospered instead, and after that we placed our hope in scientific visionaries. Today, in a clear sign of evolution totally sliding off the rails, our most coveted trait is not strength or productivity or even innovation. According to our next guest, it is being funny. Yes, funniness. It happened so gradually that we didn't even notice. Ken Jennings, the Jeopardy champion who won $2.5 million on The Quiz Show and is a best-selling author, has written the new book Planet Funny, How Comedy Took Over Our Culture, where he looks at this brave new comedic world and what it means or doesn't mean to be funny in it right now. Again, the name of the book is Planet Funny, How Comedy Took Over Our Culture, and we welcome Ken Jennings to the roundtable this morning. Ken, thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, thanks. Good morning.
At what point did you decide you wanted to look at comedy and our culture?
I've been a comedy nerd my whole life, you know, a class clown in elementary school, and then, you know, staying up late to watch Letterman or Saturday Night Live and feeling like I was doing something kind of naughty that my parents wouldn't get. But I really started to think about comedy seriously when I got on Twitter a few years ago, and it kind of broke my brain, just this avalanche of jokes all day and all night. And the way I found myself starting to think like a comedy writer and think about joke construction, even though I didn't work in that field, I thought, this is probably happening to millions of people in America, and I bet it's changing our society.
With that in mind, I bet it's changing society, you find out very quickly that, yes, it is indeed changing our society.
Well, you know, once I started to see it, once I started to look for cases where things that didn't used to be funny now have to be funny, they were everywhere. I felt like I'd put on the magic sunglasses in the Rowdy Roddy Piper movie, and there were just jokes everywhere I looked. Politics, media, advertising, you know, ever since Muhammad Ali, athletes have had to be funny. Gourmet cuisine is witty now. Architecture is funny. Airline safety videos are funny. Church marquees have jokes and one-liners on them. You know, this is stuff that used to be deathly serious. A crashing plane is not funny, but Delta's giving us little comedy sketches every time they show us how to use the oxygen masks now.
And as you point out in the book, there was a time where Madison Avenue would say, do not make jokes when you're trying to sell people things.
Isn't that crazy? We can't even imagine that today. David Ogilvy, the ad guru of the 60s that Don Draper is kind of based on, used to say, do not attempt humor. Even if people enjoy it and remember the punchline, they will forget the product. And he's not wrong. That has happened before. Taco Bell got rid of the Chihuahua because people loved the commercials but didn't order the gorditas. But in general, now in the age of the internet, if an ad goes viral, it will be seen for free by millions of people who seek it out. So it really doesn't matter if only a third of them remember the product. It just means millions more people are going to see the ad without the company spending a dime. And as a result, you know, you watch the Super Bowl now and every ad is a little absurdist comedy sketch that the agency desperately hopes will go viral online.
You look at this, but give us some of the names that are responsible for giving us this humor-saturated modern age.
In advertising, it's a really interesting guy, Stan Freberg. He essentially invented this idea. He was he did the voice of many of the Looney Tunes characters. He wrote for Mad Magazine. He had gold novelty records in the 50s and 60s. But when his radio show got canceled because sponsors didn't like his edgy comedy, he said, I'm going to go into advertising. If you can't beat him, join him. And he spent the rest of his life writing, you know, funny little comedy sketches as ads with irony and meta comedy and all kinds of, a really advanced bag of tricks that kind of gave us our modern age.
He would do it for prunes. It was today the pits, tomorrow the wrinkles. That was one of his bits.
That's exactly right. And when I was a kid, he did those Encyclopedia Britannica infomercials where the kid would talk to the camera and a voice would say, I want to change the channel. And the kid would be like, no, you got to watch this. Very ahead of its time.
And that was played by his son, Donovan. It's really, he was the absolute best, but it was okay because he also came from a comedic background, but it took a while, didn't it, for them to realize that what he was doing was something that was, once it started to sell product, it was when people started to notice.
Yeah, sponsors didn't like it at first. And now we've gotten to the point where, you know, sponsors will just beg agencies to do funny ads, even for products that aren't that funny. You know, Weight Watchers now has comedy ads. Procter & Gamble has said that Old Spice, their deodorant, is no longer just a deodorant. It's an entertainment brand. The deodorant is almost secondary to the funny guy online doing the funny things on a horse.
So in advertising, Stan Freberg, in other branches, who do you think some of the pioneers were?
Well, in sports, I've said it's Muhammad Ali. He used to be kind of a soft-spoken, humble young man. And one morning he did a radio interview in Vegas and saw Gorgeous George, the wrestler. And George was doing his big, I'm going to murder him. He'll never get out of the ring, blah, 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 blah. And Ali thinks, wow, that's the way to do it. And he kind of reinvents his whole persona. And now we have the modern world where every team and every promoter wants every athlete to be funny on social media after the game, win or lose. In politics, it's actually Bill Clinton, probably. In 1988, he gave a disastrous speech at the Democratic National Convention, and everybody thought this guy's career is over.
Right.
And he salvaged it by going on Carson just a few days later and, you know, playing sax with the band and bantering with Johnny about his boring speech. And suddenly he was back and people were like, wow, I guess this is how it has to work now.
And when it comes to late night comedy, Carson certainly there, but Letterman really a game changer.
You know, the late night show was really invented out of the head of Steve Allen in the 50s, much as we see it today. The monologue, the musical guest, really the whole thing. And it's just kind of metastasized like a disease, so now it's on every channel at once. But David Letterman was kind of the crucial piece for my generation because of the irony. You know, this was something new. This was a guy doing a talk show, but making fun of talk shows. And this felt incredibly transgressive to 12-year-old me, and I watched it religiously. And I think it kind of is what gave us kind of the snarky, modern way of looking at comedy that's really the default language of the internet today.
How much of this goes into right now what we're seeing when it comes to comedy, of a golden age, if you will, in concert with our modern politics?
Right. I mean, two things are happening. One is that people are legitimately starting to get their news from comedy shows. You know, if you don't hear about an event during the day on your social media feed through memes or jokes, you know, you'll probably hear about it with a monologue joke from Stephen Colbert or Seth Meyers or Trevor Noah tonight. And that's crazy that as many kids are getting their news from The Daily Show as from top-selling national newspapers. And then you've got the other side of the equation, which is politicians who've realized they have to be funny and they have to go be guests on these shows. That was very undignified when Bill Clinton did it in 1992. People were tisking at him for going on Donahue and Larry King. And now that's the only way to get elected. And in fact, we're starting to see a culture maybe starting in 2016 where the biggest, goofiest showman can get elected just based on being more entertaining than the other people, whether they're qualified or not.
And as you mentioned a moment ago, you noticed this from Twitter, that that's what it takes to be popular on social media and to get followers, if that is what you want, is to be funny.
Yeah, it's something about, especially Twitter, the short attention span of it, I think. You know, humor is really one of the only art forms, except for maybe Japanese haiku, where brevity is everything. The joke won't land if it's not the shortest possible way to tell it. And that's a perfect match for our short attention span time, and it's a perfect match for social media. And once some people are being funny, it's just like in late night TV, Nightline can't compete against Carson and Letterman. It seems kind of stodgy and old-fashioned to try to counter-program something serious when something delightful and merry is going on the other channels. And I think that happens on the internet as well. Once Twitter is mostly used for joking, then people trying to use it for advocacy or news just look silly and old-fashioned.
Is it cyclical in the sense of that we will become more serious as time goes on?
That's kind of the big question of the book, because I'm really skeptical about a lot of the effects of comedy. It seems like we're all laughing more and having less and less fun. and or at least telling more jokes and having less and less fun. And in the past, it has been cyclical. You know, the 80s comedy club boom with all these hacky white guys telling jokes about airline food, that all went away and all the clubs shut down. But today, I don't know if that can happen. You know, I remember on 9/11 when everybody said, oh, this is the death of irony. You know, that part of American history is over. And guess what? 9 days later, The Daily Show was back. I think 6 days later, The Onion was back. SNL came back 2 weeks later. The comedy avalanche just started rolling again because now it's everywhere and we need it.
I know Letterman has talked about this. He said a long time ago that when the O.J. Simpson case came about and that he made a remark to Howard Stern shortly after the murders and said, because Howard Stern was making a joke about it, and he said, I'm sorry, Howard, I don't find anything funny about a double homicide. And then yet a year later, he found himself making jokes about the O.J. Simpson case. And what he realized is that when something overtakes popular culture that much, it is ripe for satire.
I think that's exactly right. You know, the passage of time helps. You know, we had to wait to see it was safe to make jokes about O.J. or whatever. But I think on social media today, you see that time period is getting less and less. A celebrity will die and people will be making witty jokes about it within minutes. You know, the founder of IKEA dies and suddenly you get your screen is just a scroll of people making jokes about how I hope his casket came with an Allen wrench or whatever. And you have to stop and think, it's funny, but see, you were laughing.
Yeah. Well, it
but
is
you have
funny
to stop and think like, is that an appropriate response, you know, for somebody to die and like a million people just start to have a joke contest about it? Like it's a little callous. I don't know if that's a good look for us.
So, but you do wonder, once you've done it, how you go back to a point of, oh, all right, well, let's be a little more staid.
Yeah, it's, I would like to see more sincerity. I feel like it does not make me a better person personally to always be looking for the quip on Twitter or the banter, the funny follow-up remark at dinner. Even if people think, oh yeah, he's the funny guy. That's not much of a life's achievement to be the funny guy. You know, it's not too late to choose something else. What if I wanted to be the generous guy or the understanding guy or the good listener, you know? So I think, I don't know if we can go back to the sincerity we had before the irony boom, but it would be nice if we were aware of the problem. If we thought, whoa, 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 wait a second. Mm. I just bought this product because the ad was funny. I don't even know if it's good. I just voted for this guy because his rallies were goofy. What if he's not the best candidate? You know, I think awareness will go a long way.
And you know, of course, that, and I don't even say this as a joke. I mean this seriously. But you'll always be known as the Jeopardy guy.
Right. Like it's too late for me. Like I was on Jeopardy before I turned 30. Like my epitaph was written like when I was just like a few years out of college. So, but I don't mind that. Jeopardy was always my favorite TV show as a kid. So that's very flattering, actually.
The name of the book is Planet Funny, How Comedy Took Over Our Culture. It's a delightful book and really fascinating. It is published by Scribner. Ken Jennings, a pleasure having you aboard. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks very much. Again, the name of the book is Planet Funny, How Comedy Took Over Our Culture. Ken Jennings is the author. It's published by Scribner. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.